with your hosts, Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly.
Welcome, everybody, to the Movie Night Podcast. I am TK Kelly, joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Dwayne Perkins. Each and every week, we watch a movie along with a special guest, and then we talk about it to you guys. It is revolutionary.
Yes, it is. And this week, we truly have a special guest. We always say that, but it really is the case today. This guy, we go way, way back. We've done sketch comedy together, ODC, Old Dirty Conservatory. We've actually, we've done pilots together, slash short films, his thesis, called At Your Convenience. I played in that, and it won all types of awards. and he directed me in my sort of feature film starring debut, Dying to Kill. This guy's a very funny man, very funny writer, and a great director, and my good friend, Ray Lai.
Oh, thank you.
Ray, what's going on, man?
What's going on, guys? It is a genuine pleasure to be here. Thank you guys so much for having me. I know you were scraping the bottom of the barrel, I appreciate that. I was with you, dog.
That's serious. Why Dwayne buttered that. You up at the top, because he was like, really needed somebody. No.
I got an email last night, which I find a little unprofessional.
So what's going on, man? What have you been up to?
Actually, primarily focused on editing Dying to Kill, actually. I spent the last couple months holed away in my office, just cutting away, cobbled together our first and second cut now, and it's... I'm really happy with it so far. Well, really excited for people to get the chance to see it. And so that's
Ray
been really
did
great.
Not hate the assembly cut.
I did not hate the assembly cut. Hated the assembly cut of At Your Convenience. And that turned out to be, I'm very proud of At Your Convenience. And it was a...
At Your Convenience is the jam.
It's yeah. Go check it out.
I heard it won many rewards.
It made so many rewards.
Oh, God.
I got to say, I'm very excited for people to be able to check it out. Hopefully, at the outset of 2016, people will start getting a chance to see it, if all things fall our way. Mostly just working on that and finishing up a couple other smaller projects that I directed right before I did Dying to Kill. And then we're going to actually hand it off to another editor soon. So I'm excited about that because I get a little break. And
You get to not do all the work.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the movie. Tell us what you can, at least, about it.
I can talk about it a little bit. I feel like it's... Dying to Kill is about a sort of paint-by-number sort of... how do you want to say this?
I always say hacky.
He was a promising comedian who became hacky.
Who just became like going for the lowest common denominator.
He aimed for the low hanging fruit every time.
Okay,
and he had a lot of potential in his youth, and maybe had a lot of friends and family and fans who believe that he's not really living up to the potential that he exhibited when he was younger.
Who is it modeled after? Tell us right now.
That person may or may not be in this room.
Right, right.
It's me. Shit.
I don't even know TK.
I fucking knew
and
it.
It's based on him.
I knew right, it. Right. He just watched one YouTube clip. He was like, fuck this guy.
I listened to the podcast once. I was like, I got it.
I get what this guy's about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we definitely pulled from my experience, but it didn't. It was in no way, when I watch it, the assembly cut, I was like, okay, let me see how I feel about this. Is it too autobiographical? Is it going to seem self-indulgent, too self-centered kind of thing? But that's all happenstance based on the story we decided to tell.
Yes.
Like, we first decided to tell a story about a comic, and then we just pulled from my experience just because...
Well,
yeah,
I mean, you're naturally going to do that. But I mean, I haven't seen it, but I also think it can't be... super autobiographical because and not to kiss your ass, but you're not a hack, so that would be
not at all.
Right. That's that would be where the split occurs.
Exactly, that's where the deviation begins. Yeah. And then he basically gets abducted by an individual who, you know, you don't really know who that person may or may not be. And Schaefer, the character's name is Schaefer Jones, is told that basically he has four chances to make his captor laugh, and each time he fails, somebody close to him dies. And so, you know, it escalates
so
from there.
It's a lighthearted family romp.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I specialize in those. I keep describing, when I came on the project, it was described to me as the King of Comedy meets Misery, which I do think is a great summation in a way to give people some shorthand, but I do feel like it's a bit... You know, you're aiming at a certain generation of film goer when you say Misery and King of Comedy.
Yeah, we should say, everyone says should say it's what and what?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we didn't want to say Saw, but
King
maybe we
of
should
comedy
say
too.
Saw.
That's like a little, like, I mean, we've done that on the podcast.
Great movie.
Unbelievable movie, but phenomenal. So many people, even of that generation, forget
exactly
that it exists.
You know, one of Scorsese's, you know, lesser seen films, I guess, in some ways. And but also, more than ever, I feel like if you revisit it now, it's very timely.
It's just great. That was a movie that was almost a little hard to do on this podcast because it was so good in every way that all we had was praise, and that's not that funny.
Yeah, that's fair. But I've been describing it since then as Saw meets Louie in a weird way, and I think that's actually gives people an idea.
I'm going to start saying that. I like that.
People know what those things are, so
they
that's a good first
more contemporary.
Well, the assembly cut, I will say, I was surprised. You know, like an assembly cut, if people don't know, it's watching a movie without music, without noise, sound, anything. The sound isn't perfected. Each scene may even sound different. It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, actually.
It's like you literally are taping, you record it, and then you watch it back untouched.
And it's very, very rough.
Mm-hmm. It's everything that is written into the script cut in without, you know, so there's no thought of efficiency or you know, tightening
up. But it works. It worked, like, meaning I could picture, once this thing gets, it's almost like the assembly cut is like the character. Like, and when he was first coming out, people go, oh, there's some promise there. Mm-hmm. The assembly cut has a lot of promise, and I thought the jokes, because Ray is funny and I'm funny, so we're trying to make it scary and funny.
Yeah.
And we've had many conversations about making sure it's going to be scary. And the scariness is there. That's what we're going to work on. It's certainly scary, but it's certainly funny.
Yeah. It's just, I think the biggest thing that
And it's not a spoof, by the way.
So. It's not a spoof at all. This is not a scary scary movie. I mean, it's intended
not,
to be a scary movie.
Scary
this is
movie.
Not capital S,
yes.
capital M, scary movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I always tried to when I got brought onto the project, which was after, I believe, the first outline, Dwayne came to me and brought me on the project. I really wanted to try to make characters that you could... I never wanted to make a horror sort of like cannon fodder character movie where these people were just dying and you just couldn't wait to just see them die. I wanted to make a movie where you hope they didn't die and that you enjoyed hanging out with
them. Stakes. It's not because there are funny, scary movies, but some of them skew much more towards the funny side.
Absolutely.
Where it's like death in it is, it's hilarious.
Exactly.
And it's supposed to be. And I imagine, though, that's got to be a weird thing, watching such a rough cut of a movie that's intended to be genuinely scary, because I feel like it's probably hard to convey, like, so much of that can be done with music and sound. And so is it weird watching something that's supposed to be scary and thinking to yourself, like, that's not scary enough. What do we do wrong?
I think, well, it's at this point, it's not, I don't, try not to approach it as what do we do wrong. It's what can we do
well, that's
now
what
to
I
improve
mean. It's,
it? Yeah,
to,
yeah.
To make yourself not think that way.
Yeah. Well, it's that, I think, you know, in watching it and being aware of the lack of, you know, sound effects, which, you know, I think people really underestimate how effective they can be. Rewatch something like Jaws, take John Williams' score, which is, you know, it's the score, not the sound effects, but still,
well,
you
both.
Take that away.
I think any audio and music play such a huge role in anything that's meant to be frightening.
Absolutely.
Right. And frightening, I feel like audio can obviously helps scary moments in movies, but just also to set a tone and set a time. And
absolutely.
That's what I liked about Dazed and Confused, which is our movie we're doing this week, is the music is certainly very well picked in terms
it's
of
perfect.
This is it's, this time.
This is one of
this is this music.
Got to be one of the best soundtracks ever. I think
it's
just not for just the quality of music, but the fit to the movie.
Absolutely,
the needle drops, the selections are just so ridiculously on point in this movie.
And it's not just that the songs are of the time; it's that they're just right for the film.
Oh,
absolutely.
And Ray's a musician, by the way, as well. So the movie this week is Dazed and Confused from 1993. Director Richard Linklater stars. An all-star cast. I'm going to leave people out, but Jason London, Wiley Wiggins, Matthew McConaughey, Joey Lauren Adams, Mila Jovovich, Adam Goldberg, who I thought was great.
He's always great.
So what do we think about this movie, guys?
This movie's amazing. This is going to be a tough one to do. I love this movie.
Yeah, I it is, the reason I picked this, one of my favorite movies ever. I mean, it really is. And I've seen a fair amount of movies, I believe. And it's also a pivotal movie for me. I was 13 when the movie came out. I saw it in the theaters, which not a lot of people did at the time. You know, had it on VHS tape.
Yeah,
I rewatched it so many times. And even watching it last night, I was commenting to my wife this morning. I was grinning ear to ear. Like, I know what songs are coming up. I know when Lowrider's about to kick in. Still just beaming when it happens.
Right.
And it's just because just like we discussed, like, it is so effective in his song choice at the right time. But it's also because you there's that moment in when they're listening to Lowrider and Anthony Rapp's character, Tony, is just about to whistle the horn line and... Adam Goldberg turns the music down.
Yeah, he turns it down.
Right. He's like, I have to admit something. And he goes,
and
in the hospital.
I love that part too, because the music is over the preceding scenes.
Exactly.
And then it's like, oh, it's on the radio in this
and
car.
They're just enjoying it.
Yes, like, oh, that's fucking cool.
It's so good.
Yeah. And you know, I have a confession. I hadn't watched this movie before. Certainly not from beginning to end. I mean,
really?
Seen scenes.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's why, like, when you suggested it, I was like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What's crazy is that my experience was first. Maybe say 10 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm at all points, I was enjoying the performances because I'm like, man, these are great performances.
Phenomenal.
And
for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But now that I'm in the movie, I like, it feels good to say that. Like, I realize it's hard. Like, certain, you know, acting is not easy.
Yeah.
You know, certain.
And this is a lot of.
But everyone's great.
Very young.
Yeah.
It's all young actors.
Yeah.
A lot of first timers in this movie.
And
too.
A lot of would be stars. And,
yeah.
And so I enjoyed the performances, but as I was watching it, just the storylines, because there's, you know, a lot of characters. At first, I was just sort of like a little anxious that it wasn't going to come together, or like, what's happening? And like, I'm from New York City, so like, just like, I didn't. No one from my junior high school went to my high school. Like, one person. Like,
right.
I didn't. No one from my elementary school went to my junior high school. It's like a snake shedding skin. Like, it's always new people, and we didn't drive. We only took the train to school.
Yeah, this is a very singular, like, small town high school.
Absolutely.
So, but I will say this: I just thought I wasn't going to be able to, in my mind, juggle the storylines.
Yeah.
But by the end of the movie, like, I literally wanted to just watch it again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, that's, like, I wanted to, I didn't have time, but I wanted to watch it right then. So
yeah. It does
really
have that
came
feel.
Together.
I could see that at the start, it does feel like it might be kind of a jumbled mess because there's a shitload of characters introduced.
Yeah.
But, and not all of them get, you know, a full story played out. A lot of them are kind of just,
I guess,
just
many people would argue
ancillary.
There was no story at all. And
that's
that was
true.
A big
it's really
criticism that's been levied
day
against them.
In the life.
The only,
though, it's,
the only story is, will he sign this letter or not?
Right.
Yeah, that's kind
basically.
Of the through point. But yeah, it is sort of just a look at this one day.
Yep.
And it's, I don't think, I don't know. I don't think it lacks a story because the last day of school is sort of a story in itself.
Right. And I think, you know, what you were just about, I thought you were going to say, and you may have been dancing around this, is that ultimately why I keep coming back to this movie is that the characters, the performances are so strong, the characters are so fully realized that they are real people. Every detail that Linklater hit in this film, they're so specific, and it makes each of these characters feel like people you either know or want to know and hang out with.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep coming back to this movie, because I want to hang out with Wooderson again. I want to hang out with Hershberger. You know, all these characters.
Yeah.
Even like Hershberger had like 8 lines in the movie, and I'm like, I kind of want to hang out with him, dropping his books, getting there, you know, all of that. And so I love that about this
movie.
And
when McConaughey, when he's introduced, it feels like it kicks it up a notch. Like,
he's fucking unreal. This was
such dynamite.
This was his first
professional gig.
And he was just
Is that
so,
right?
Yeah,
oh
so that, that first time when he's hitting on Cynthia, saying, you know, you ought to ditch the two losers in the car and hop in with us, but, you know, we'll have to worry about that later. That's the first time he was ever on camera.
That's fucking insane.
It's
like, and he's just, you're right though, it does jump it up because it's like, he's the first character that sort of has some real stakes. Like, he lives in the real world, but he kind of dips his toe into these kids' lives.
And he's so unapologetic.
Yeah,
he's the
best.
Great.
He's such like, this guy's a horrible piece of shit. Like, but we love him. It's insane.
Absolutely.
You're like, God, this guy's amazing. But when you really look at it, you're like, kind of a rapist.
Yeah, super creepy.
Just like hanging around with the high school kids, getting them in trouble and trying to fuck all the girls. Like, and you, I think every, I mean, at least I had the experience of being in a small town found that there were guys like that for sure.
Yeah.
But you didn't like them. Like, you were kind of like, God, this guy's awful. What a creep. Right, but he was just that. He was just magnetic enough that it was.
He's the so charming. I mean,
he's so charming.
And that's the thing. Like you said, the instant he comes on camera, it's just oozes charisma.
Yeah.
And it was apparently you read about, you know, Linklater talking about the production of the movie, and his part was actually beefed up. He was supposed to have a very small part. Another actor on the set had difficulty sort of like, he was kind of a problematic actor. And so he basically just whittled his part down and just kept putting Matthew McConaughey in more and more scenes.
Is that right?
And it's, the camera loves him. I mean, he was a star. He was a star, from that.
And he just, the fact that he brought such humanity to that. Yes.
That's not an easy guy to
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You shouldn't like him on any account. He has really no redeeming qualities except that he seems to be nice to most people.
Exactly.
That's the one thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Except, although he does call those, immediately calls the two guys in the car geeks right to their face.
Right.
But it's almost like you're not even mad at him. They weren't even mad at him. Yeah, they're like, God, that guy's cool. I like him. We are geeks.
Yeah. Any help that he stopped that guy from getting his ass kicked.
By Clint. Yeah.
Yeah, he's always like very, I don't know. This movie is like, if you need to remember why he's so hugely successful, because he was came out of the gate so strong, and then he made like a string of real horseshit movies, and now he's kind of back to making good movies. But if you just go back and watch this, you're like, God, I get it.
Yep.
Like, this is your first movie? That's not even fair. You shouldn't be allowed to be that good.
In a movie surrounded by immense talent.
Yeah.
He would shine so brightly against, you know,
guys,
the future
Batman.
Guys, we're
just here to talk about Matthew McConaughey.
I mean, really.
Right. We love him.
All conversations devolve into a love fest for Matthew McConaughey, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. We do it every episode, even when he's not in the movie.
No, he absolutely
killed it. We're changing
the
name of the podcast to McConaughey Night.
I will say, you know, about the performances, I was, you know, again, you know, rewatching it last night, and there's just this one shot that I kept singling out. I mean, there's a bunch of amazing shots and amazing sequences in this movie, but there's one that I hadn't really, for whatever reason, never really looked at too much, and it's early on in the movie, and it's when the popular girls kind of like get up and go to the bathroom to continue their conversation about Gilligan's Island, and then the camera follows them and then settles on a four shot of basically the geeks and Randall Pink Floyd, and the whole rest of the scene takes place in that one shot, no cuts, and everyone's performance is amazing, and most of them aren't even talking; they're just interacting and reacting to what, you know, Randall and Mike, Adam Goldberg, are talking about. They're talking about the pledge.
Right.
And it is just, those shots are really hard to pull off just from a directorial standpoint, just because you always want to have cuts. You want to be able to edit. You want to have options. And to have the courage to just trust your actors at such young actors and inexperienced and green actors to nail these.
Right.
Maybe he had coverage. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot that's very ballsy about how this movie's made. And I wonder if, though, that's why it still like holds up so much and feels so authentic, because it's not a bunch of cuts. It's, you know, it's a long shot of these kids who are playing kids and mostly doing a fucking killer job.
Yeah.
Mostly. I mean, there's a couple swings and misses, but for the size of the cast.
Yeah.
For there to be
the hit to miss ratio,
it's insane.
Yeah.
But you know the thing too, I think, from a thematic and just the design of the story, so often 93, so you're coming out of the 80s, where every high school movie, the lines were drawn so rigidly, like, these are the jocks, these are this, these are that. And I mean, this movie seems to fall back on weed, like, that's what we all have in common, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I do like that you have characters who moved in between those
fluid
groups, which that aspect very much relates to my high school experience.
Yeah, I agree. Too. I think it is like the thought is to always put everyone in a group when it comes to movies about kids in school. But this was more real, where there was movement between the groups, and there was, you know, like, the quarterback could potentially just be a nice guy who kind of got along with everybody.
Yes.
And then the quote nerds could have cool friends, but then also have people who hate them for no reason. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just very real in that they didn't draw those lines.
Right. And it wasn't about, like, you get that right away, because, like, the second scene, I guess, is the nerds are like, oh, we're just going to play chess or gamble.
Cards.
Excuse me. We're
going
to gamble, cards, play cards. And they're like, come to the party. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, good. Like, this movie isn't going to be about, like, them crashing the party and and like, oh my God, we get to hang out with this person, like who you see every day. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So they sort of like did a good job of just, okay, this is not that, you know?
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that.
Let's launch into the games. Each week we do a handful of questions that relate to the movie in particular. Right out the gate, our old standby, make a drinking game out of this. So anything that happens repeatedly in the movie,
yes.
You take a drink. For me, this kind of addresses the what I thought was kind of a swing and miss as far as the casting.
I think I know where this is going.
Take a shot every time Wiley Wiggins, who plays Mitch, touches his face or his hair. God bless the kid. I think it was his first thing ever, too, and he hasn't really stuck with acting too much. And I identify with it because sometimes being on camera can be uncomfortable, and if you don't
Absolutely.
Know what you're doing, the first thing you do is like, what the hell do I do with my hands? And he just didn't know. He just constantly, his acting was all nose touching and then just doing a lot of ugh, mm-hmm. ugh, just a lot of sighs and disgust. And that's the only part of this movie that I'm still like, God damn it. That could have been so perfect.
And if you read interviews with him now, he says that literally people still come up to him almost every day and like, hey, touch your nose. Like, they'll literally
wow. I feel bad because I do identify with it. Like, it's a weird thing. It's like that thing from Talladega Nights where Will Ferrell doesn't know what to do with his hands when he's being interviewed, and they just pop up into frame. Like, this kid clearly didn't know, and I kind of want to be a fly on the wall for, like, Richard Linklater being like, stop touching your fucking face!
Yeah.
Forget it. We got it. We're just moving on.
Yeah, exactly. We gotta move.
Sometimes new stand-up comics will, like, do weird things with the mic cord.
It's always... I still, on stage, sometimes in the moment, I'm like, what am I doing with my hands right now? Mm-hmm. Is this what I'd normally be doing, or am I thinking about it? It's a weird thing. Dwayne, what do you think? What's your dream game?
Well, here's the thing. Watching this movie, I can tell I'm getting older. I hadn't seen this movie before. Obviously, mm-hmm. I'm getting older, but just because coming-of-age movies, sometimes someone dies. That represents the loss of innocence, right?
Sure.
And so, like, I'm watching this movie, loving it, enjoying it, hoping no one dies. So every time you think someone is going to die, take a drink.
So you thought, did you think somebody was going to fall off the moon tower?
Yeah,
that, the drunk driving.
Yeah, they are
so
doing,
many
they, I mean, they get
precarious
they get guns
situations.
Held to their, there is a lot of danger in this
and,
day.
Either that or every time someone's driving a nice car, that's sort of given their age and lack of income, doesn't make sense.
He's just mad about it.
Right.
Well, we didn't see their homes. Maybe
that's
all
true.
Of their money went into their car. I don't know. I had a couple that was batting around, but I guess I didn't realize we could do two. I'll do one, which is every time someone is holding a fucking paddle. The spanking paddle.
That's a good
Anytime there's a paddle on screen.
The paddles get a lot of screen time, more than most of the actors.
Yes.
Like you see him making the paddle, you see Benny making the paddle
in the very beginning.
The paddle has like an arc too. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
And because then it gets like a hairline fracture and they point that out. Anyway. So there's a lot of paddles. And then the other one which is really, you know, film nerdy, but it's every time there's an overcranked shot set to music. Take a shot. Basically, anytime there's slow motion set to a song, take a drink. And there's a lot of
there's
those.
Plenty of that. Yeah.
There's some great ones too.
So let's pitch the sequel. So this, like we said, is sort of a day in the life story of a bunch of high schoolers. So you know what happens next. What characters does it focus on? Why don't you lead this one off, right?
Sure. I got my pitch. See, due to a clerical error, Darla. Portrayed by Parker Posey,
horrible, horrible person.
Must
in the
attend
movie.
Air Force Academy, where she has to navigate the tricky social hierarchy in Dazed and Confused 2, Air Raid Bitches.
I like that because that is
very nice.
Like, this is set in 76, and that has such an 80s movie feel. I dig it.
Yeah, that is great.
What do you think, Dwayne?
I feel like what I wrote might be like two movies. Part two and part three.
You're creating a trilogy.
Yeah.
Just taking liberties.
Jason London's character, he doesn't sign a pledge, but he still plays the next season. He breaks all types of records. They win the state championship. He goes to Miami, U of Miami, the U, where they don't mind that kind of stuff. He beats three rape charges, but he's actually innocent. He's actually innocent of all three.
Okay.
His teammates are totally guilty, though. But he's innocent. They win the national championship. He fizzes out in the NFL, plays maybe 1 or 2 years, journeyman, you know. Then he gets back with Matthew McConaughey's character. They take the NFL money. They open a nightclub in Miami. And then they get in. They get caught up with some Colombian drug lords.
And, and then whatever.
Doesn't it just turn into Magic Mike? Isn't Matthew McConaughey already doing that?
All right. Mine was basically checking back in with them 10 years later in 86 just to see what everybody's doing. For Randall Pink Floyd, he seems to me like he's a very talented football player who just doesn't give a shit. Right. So I think he winds up in the CFL for a few years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he makes a good living, but he just gets to live his life the way he wants to. Mitch is a snarky hairdresser because he's just got beautiful hair. And
yes, he does.
All he ever does, just a lot of disgust. So I think he's kind of a bitch. Don is one of my favorite characters. I don't know how Don. This guy didn't get famous after this. He's the guy who wears the overalls the whole time, and he's a super pervert.
Yeah.
He's a UPS driver who tries to fuck all the housewives.
Sure.
Darla was beaten to death by her sorority sisters. Wooderson is absolutely in jail. Like, there's no question about that. 10 years later, maybe a year later, he's in jail. And O'Banion is the governor of Texas. I could see him climbing up.
Absolutely.
Like, I could see him doing there. Take a life lesson from it. So if you're going to live your life according to something you learned from this movie, from this day going forward, well, what did it teach you? What did you learn? What do you think, Dwayne?
I have, in order to be cool, you have to do what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
That's just a silly...
Just go to the kegger. just fucking go
don't fight
to the party,
it. Don't fight
drink
it.
Beer, and smoke weed.
Yeah.
Kids.
Live your life.
Yeah,
life experience.
Mine was actually, I don't know if it's a life lesson so much as it's just a little eye-opening about the decade itself, but I learned that the 70s, it was a wondrous time when you could just stalk, follow, and beat other people's children publicly,
right.
No one stopped you.
He made an announcement.
There was one mom who was mad.
Yeah.
They followed Mitch to his baseball game. His parents weren't there, like, but I imagine there were other parents there, and they're just yelling at him, like, "We're gonna fuck you up after this game."
Even the teacher from the junior high.
It was just
25. He ain't coming back.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, it's probably I think it's overdone a little bit, but also probably true. People weren't such babies back then.
I think it's
a rite of passage. You got to beat the shit out of my kid.
I think it's ingrained in a certain subculture.
You know,
I think, I dated a girl from Houston, Texas, who was a cheerleader, and that shit happened. She was kidnapped from her home when she was, made a part of the cheerleading squad and, hazed to high school.
Especially around, the sports culture.
Yeah.
It's crazy down there.
You know.
A lot of slow motion boy spanking going on in Texas.
Set to amazing soundtrack.
They do go pro, so that's something to consider.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Maybe we should all be spanking other people's children. That is not what I meant to say. let's finish up with this
last
game.
My life lesson. Sure. One of my favorite lines in the movie is when they're leaving the eighth grade dance, and Hershberger says, "Man, I was getting there," and Carl Burnett, says, "Son, you wouldn't know what to do even if you had gotten there, so don't worry about it."
Yeah.
And my life lesson I took from that was always make sure that I know what I'm doing. Always make sure that I know what to do when I get there, wherever there is.
Yes.
Very nice.
Carl did drop a little knowledge on him, and that was the most confident you see Carl whole and me, he just cock-blocked his friend, let's be honest.
His friend was
getting there.
He was.
And then he's like, "Son, you wouldn't know." I was like, "Shut the fuck up, Carl."
Pants.
I don't see you making out with anybody. let's try to squeeze this last one in.
This is really bizarre.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
Dwayne's on a little bit of a weird presidential kick
political.
Lately.
I haven't seen the movie, so
recast five of the characters with the five living presidents.
Right, and there's five, right?
Yes, there is. Okay. I did have to check on that.
Yeah, I thought Carter went, but
I was on the fence with who, around his time. I'm like, I don't know who's alive or dead from that time. Let's have you lead this one
off,
Dwayne.
Cool. It wasn't too hard, actually.
No, I feel like we're all going to line up.
I was going to change the question anyway.
Yeah, we can all jump in and say if it's the same one instead of going around.
George W. is Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because he's got that coolness factor. I once saw George W. Bush throw out a first pitch. To this day, he's the best first pitch.
Oh, let's be honest, he's easily the most, maybe him or Clinton, but just generally the most comfortable in normal, real social situations.
Yeah.
The first pitch, he was like, "Yeah, I'm fucking pro."
Perfect strike, in a suit.
He did not sweat it.
Obama's the freshman who becomes cool.
Interesting.
Because the other presidents are kind
of,
Jimmy Carter is Adam Goldberg's character.
Oh, see, I went with Tony on
I thought
vastly between those two.
Bush Senior is the cool football coach.
The assistant who talks about her assistant, grandma.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I know he's not a president, so this is kind of a cheat. But Cheney is who kind of was president, you know? Cheney is the hard ass head coach.
That makes perfect sense.
Who's what, like, you got to sign this thing.
Yeah. What do you think, Ray?
I went with O'Banion for W.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I had to. You got to.
Because you just see,
like, so obvious.
First of all, like, he's from Texas.
Exactly.
And, like, I feel like he was definitely the guy beating the shit out of helpless freshmen and just laughing his ass off about
definitely
it.
The guy that held back a second year to do it again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
I went with Obama as Randall Pink Floyd.
So did I.
Socially,
we're on the same page.
He's fluid. Yeah, he's cool
with everybody.
He's kind of cool with everybody. Yeah. He could be a total dick, but he seems like he's nice in spite of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. Let's keep going.
Clinton as Wooderson.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
He's the pervy, but somehow still lovable man.
Yes, absolutely.
You shouldn't love Bill Clinton. He's kind of a creep, but he's the best. He's the Matthew McConaughey of presidents.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I actually forgot about Clinton.
And then,
you threw Cheney in and didn't put Clinton in?
Yeah.
You killed Bill Clinton? Not cool, man.
H.W., I relegated H.W. to a small role. I put him as the liquor store clerk who tells the girl to eat a green thing every day. Because I think H.W. would knock that role out.
I see that, and that kind of sounds like him a little bit,
exactly.
Too. It's like, eat a green thing every day.
Exactly. Easy swap. And then, like I said, Jimmy Carter is Tony. Because I feel like Tony eventually would grow into someone who, I don't know, cares for humanity and all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
We were on point. I went with George H.W. Bush as Mitch only because I thought it would be funnier to see him play a younger character than his son. And also, I guarantee you there's times that Father George Bush has said, God, I hate that guy, about his own kid. So I want to see him and his kid play O'Banion. And Jimmy Carter, just because it's really dumb and I like to imagine this is what he does on, like, work sites when they're building houses for people, I want him to be Darla and just kind of a bitch to everybody, just screaming at all the new people. I don't think that's what Jimmy Carter is, guys, but you never know. I think that about does it for this week. Ray, thanks so much for being here, man.
Thank you so much
for having me.
It's a blast.
Want to tell people how to find you, social media, website, anything like that?
Twitter and Instagram handle, CFriendlyImages, @CFriendlyImages. That's the letter C, and then Friendly Images. You can find me, follow me there, say hi. Tell me how much you love Dwayne. I'm cool with that.
Check him out, guys.
My Twitter handle is FunnyDP, website DwaynePerkins.com. You can see the latest and greatest. Second week of September, I'll be in Tacoma, Washington.
I am at TK Kelly Comedy on Twitter, and if you're in LA, come out to the Westside Comedy Theater next week on the 19th. Me and a couple other guys from Tosh.0 are doing a show to kind of close out the Threesis tour we just came off of. We'll have some other Comedy Central guys there. Come check it out. Ray, thanks again for being here, man.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Tune in next week.
You've been listening to Movie Night with Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly. Be sure to like them on Facebook. Just search for Movie Night Podcast Show. And follow them on Twitter. Just search for @MovieNightCast.